Hello, 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 everyone. It's Jacquette Timmons here of JacquetteTimmons.com. And I am just so thrilled that you are here for the first Financial Intimacy Hour of the year. And I'm really glad that you've made it to the call because I've received a few email messages from one person that is actually stuck in Atlanta and they can't get out. So for those of you that are on the phone live, in terms of being on the actual phone or whether you're participating in the webcast, I'm really excited that you are here tonight for the very first Financial Intimacy Hour of the year with my very special guest, Ali Shapiro. And we are exploring the curious connection between emotional eating and impulse buying. And we're doing this all with the goal of helping you shift from self-defeating habits to healthy ones. And in a moment, I'll do more of a formal introduction of Ali, and I'll let you hear from her about her. But first, let's take care of a few housekeeping items, because I did a session a couple of weeks ago, and I was just a-talking and realized eventually that no one could hear me. So if you are on the phone, if you would do me the great pleasure of pressing star 2 on your phone, and that will raise your hand and let me know that you can hear me well. And if you are on the webcast, if you could press, I should say type, yes, or if the case is no, no in the Q&A box, which you will find on the left-hand side of your screen, that will give me some feedback. So pardon my silence for a moment, but it is just me toggling back and forth between the dashboards so that I can see if, in fact, you can hear me. So fantastic. The folks on the phone can hear me well, and I'm going to then presume that the people on the webcast can hear me also. Yes, I think so. Well, fantastic. And asking you to do that, I also gave you the instructions for when you have a question or when you have a comment, that is how you get my attention. If you're on the phone, you press star 2 to raise your hand in my dashboard. And if you are on the webcast, you will type something in the Q&A box and I will eventually see it. And I will know that, again, that you have a question or an answer, or comment, I should say. Maybe you have an answer. And also, if you would prefer to remain anonymous, just I won't reread your name off if you're on the phone, but if you're in the Q&A box, if you wish to remain anonymous, just say anonymous or just don't include your name because I have no idea actually who is on the call, at least not on the webcast. Well, with those housekeeping items out of the way, I also want to just spend a moment talking about what inspired today's conversation. And if you are on my mailing list, you got today's email where I shared some research from the University of Scranton. And they talked about how for 2014, when you look at the top 10 resolutions that people made, food and money were in the top 3. Food was number 1 if people want to lose weight. And interestingly enough, spend less, save more was number 3. I'll ask you later on if you might be able to think what number 2 is. I was actually kind of surprised by it, but I raised that just to say it's January, we're at, in fact at the end of January, which is really quite surprising, and probably all of us on the call have made some sort of resolution around food or around money, the two things that we need and that we use every single day. And I have to tell you that the first time that I really saw the connection and the correlation between the two of them was when I was hosting a 4-month-long workshop. And one of the participants happened to have lost 20 to 25 pounds. I can't really recall at the moment the exact amount, but it was either 20 or 25 pounds during this 4-month experience. And it wasn't something that he had set out to do. I ask people to track their money, not for the purposes of budgeting, because as you will soon discover, I'm not a fan of budgeting, but I ask them to track it so that they can get a better sense of what their patterns are as it pertains to money. And in the process of doing that, he just organically began to shift and change some of his habits around money, and that's how he lost the weight. And that honestly was the first time that I noticed the connection between the two. Fast forward, I've had the awesome pleasure of meeting Ali Shapiro. She and I are in a mastermind together. And one of the things that I just totally love about her approach is how she looks at everything so holistically. So tonight we're talking about how we eat, how we spend, how we feel, and how that shows up in our lives on an everyday basis. And I could not think of a better person than her to have this experience with, to have this collaboration with, because she's someone who brings to this conversation the tools of a nutritionist, a trainer, and a psychologist. And all three of those things individually excite me, but then you combine them and I'm really excited. And if you've been with me for a while, you know that I've tackled this combination before, but I have to tell you that this is the most excited I have been about it. So with all of that, Ali, welcome. And I guess I need to unmute your phone, Ali. So give me 1 second. And where are you? I saw your number. Ah, there you are. Let me just unmute you. Ali, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
I sure can. Welcome. Many thanks for being here.
Thank you. I am so excited to be here. And just, you and I have very similar philosophies and outlooks, but it's so fun to be able to chat with someone who sees the big picture and understand that just like food isn't about, or money isn't just about money, food isn't just about food.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, before we dive into the questions that I have for you, and by the way, folks, what you should know is the thing that I do with all of my guests, I do send them the questions in advance just so that they're not, you know, totally surprised. So there are some structured questions. We'll have some ad-lib questions, but I never know their answers in advance. So it really is a structure, you know, a semi-structured conversation, if you will. And I will certainly open the line for Q&A at the end, but I also like to make it engaging. So we'll insert some opportunities for you to ask questions or to share some comments as we go along. But before we dive in, Ali, why don't you spend a moment introducing yourself to our community so that they can get to see why I'm so excited about introducing you to them.
Yeah, well, thank you for giving me the opportunity. I'm Ali Shapiro. I think the best way to describe me is as kind of how you did, and I'll put the metaphor around it, but a client once described me as the Swiss Army knife of wellness, using the tools of a trainer, nutritionist, and a psychologist to help people get well and really change their relationship to food. I have my master's degree is in coaching, and then I have a lot of training in functional medicine and holistic health. So that's my formal background. And for 7 years, I've been working with people privately and in groups to help them really methodically change their relationship with food. And as that happens, the byproduct is weight loss and health. So that's the formal side of my training, but informally, I think I was called to this field probably as an asthmatic child. That was when I first really started struggling with my health at a very young age. And then when I was 13, I was diagnosed with cancer and went through some pretty rigorous chemotherapy and radiation, and finished that by the time I was 14. And when you're a 14-year-old girl and you desperately want to be healthy, you internalize what that is to be skinny. And I have lost all this weight on chemotherapy, but prior to that had been trying to lose weight with Weight Watchers, and actually found the lump in my neck when I was trying to lose weight and working out on my dad's Nordic track. So I'm kind of dating myself with how old I am. I was on a Nordic track.
I used to have one of those, so it was okay.
I know, I grew up in Pittsburgh. The winters were brutal. So I was trying to find my pulse and found a lump in my neck, and my dad took me to the doctor. So I was trying to lose weight. It could probably save my life, but then it also became an unhealthy obsession. And when I went off to college, my emotional eating really it was the first time in my life. My parents obviously never controlled my food, but it was the first time in my life where I had complete control over what I was going to eat. And make my own decisions, and, you know, you're limited to the dining hall, and there's a lot of emotional issues that come up, and so I really struggled with emotional eating even more than I was able to keep it under control, my weight under control in high school, because I was pretty active, But that changed in college. And then when I got my first job out of college, it was with a really high pressure corporate job. And I started to develop irritable bowel syndrome. And my allergies that I had always struggled with had gotten worse. I was very depressed because I thought it was my weight. I thought everything was going to change when I lost weight, but I just wasn't in the right career for me or anything. And basically about 11 years ago, I sat in the doctor's office and just looked at my records, and I just was like, oh my God, I don't have cancer, but I am not healthy. I'm kind of a mess. And I realized that the traditional medical system wasn't going to help me because I had tried all the medications for depression, was carrying around my inhaler, had tried all the Claritin D's in the world, and basically started to really understand how food can connect to our lives as medicine. And then as I started to do that and go back to school and help other people, I wanted to see if it was just me, or would this really work with other people, and started my practice on the side. And then really noticed that people had the same relationship struggle and challenges in their relationship with food that I did. I thought I was alone. And I think it's kind of like money and food, right? It's all supposed to look so easy now and all this stuff, but a lot of people are silently struggling. And so that's what sent me back to grad school, because I really wanted to figure out, I should kind of back up. What I noticed is the more that I made decisions in my life based on what I wanted to do versus what looked good to the outside world, my emotional eating gradually disintegrated. And I noticed that same thing happened with my clients. They made different decisions than I did, but there was this connection. And a lot of them, it included getting their finances in order. And my clients who were self-employed, you know, as they started to get healthier and they noticed that they started to make more money. So there was a lot of this, you know, what you would think of as a side effect. So I went back to grad school to really study what was happening here, because it wasn't a blueprint or a formula. And that's how I created my process, Truce with Food, with real world clients and then some grad school.
Well, that is fantastic. Well, you know, one of the things that I love that you share on your site, and you've said it in separate conversations, is that people don't need more nutrition information. You need more understanding.
Yeah. So,
and I just would love for you to elaborate on that, because I just love that.
I know.
That's the same thing when it comes to financial information. Like, people know that 2 + 2 = 4, but just because you know that doesn't mean that you always make choices that are in alignment with the mathematical part of that equation. So,
yeah, and I think we can both agree that in both of our fields, there's been an explosion of information and how-tos, and yet there's more and more of a growing problem. I mean, they're number one and number three on people's New Year's resolution list, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if more information equaled more progress, I probably wouldn't say that. But, you know, I was at Whole Foods today, and I'm in line there, and there's every magazine cover, New Year, New You, the key to happiness, you know, 3 tips to squeeze your waistline. And what happens is what sells and what forces us to pick up magazines is drastically different than what works for us in real life. And those magazines are very, you know, one-dimensional in a way, and they aren't able to give us context. So, you know, how does this information relate to me? You know, everyone has different nutritional needs. There isn't one diet that works for everyone. So that's a big thing of understanding your own body and how that works for you. And also understanding, and you know, I love that you're on board with this too, that this is a process. And what I find with my clients is once they understand that listening to their body has this learning curve, that it is a process, they actually relax into the process and they start enjoying it. And that's when they get results. When they take it as this adventure, you know, strategy versus I have to accumulate more information, it's more like now I'm going to absorb it all. They really get into the process and get results, and that's what keeps the process going and the results coming.
And so based upon all of that you've just shared, what do you find as, or what do you see, I should say, as the biggest mistake that people make when it comes to food, and when it comes to food in particular? I mean, you kind of just alluded to it in terms of people perhaps approaching it as if it's a one size fits all, and if it works for her, it'll work for me, or if it works for him, it'll work for me. And what I'm hearing is you saying the exact opposite. But what else would you say are the mistakes that people make?
I'm so glad you said that, because I have so many clients that are like, what do you think about this paleo diet? My son's on it and they lost 10 pounds. And, you know, it's like, okay, mm-hmm. right? They hear one thing. But just like you don't believe in budgets, I don't believe in diets or any, you know, any one type of diet either. Because what happens is they condition you to not trust yourself. You know, and so then what happens is you waste all this energy and you experience all this anxiety to the point where you get this analysis paralysis. And then you say, the hell with it, and you go eat the cookie, or you go buy the, you know, the new nail polish or whatever, and then the cycle starts all over again, and you're like, oh, see, I really can't trust myself. And clients come to me after years of doing this, and I think, you know, I think that there is something in them that knows, you know, that there's something more to it, and I'm so grateful that they've chosen me to be their guide on the side. But underneath all of that is they don't trust themselves anymore. What used to be a very intuitive, natural process, you know, has become this subject fraught with anxiety, overwhelm, and just a sense of failure because they've tried so many times.
That's really fascinating, because what I just wrote down, because I'm taking notes as we're talking, what I just wrote down, you mentioned earlier the idea that more information doesn't necessarily equal more progress, and I wrote down, question mark, does more information diminish the degree to which you rely on your intuition?
Yeah.
That's for us to sit with.
Well, and that's a great question, because I think what happens is because of this conditioning, people's intuition, they don't even know what that feels like anymore, right? They say, mm-hmm. well, no, I can't be trusted. Like if I, because I know when I tell clients, like, I'm not going to give you a diet. They're like, what? You know, I'm like, I'm going to give you a process. And I'm like, but I'll eat everything then. I'm like, no. You know, you may have a couple days, but then eventually when you start realizing you're not rebelling against your own rules, right. You know, you get tired of that, and then you come back to your intuition. But you have to – it's kind of like, you know, when you turn the hose on after winter and all the rust comes out, and then the clean mm-hmm. water comes out. Mm-hmm. That's what I think happens with what we think is our intuition versus too much self-doubt or too much bad information.
But, you know, let me ask you this. You just said something that just kind of made me go, You said you when you speak with your clients, you talk to them about process. It's process over what?
Yeah, over tips and tricks.
Or
over, okay, step one is this, step two. Now, I have a framework. I know where we're going. But it's more about the questions that I ask them so that they can trust what's in front of them next. Versus, let me ground it in something very concrete, because I know sometimes I'm very philosophical. I can go on and be like, people aren't going to walk away with anything. But, for example, I know with my clients, when I work with them in Truth with Food in the group and then privately as well, everyone starts off and they're super excited, okay? They're new, they're excited for this, and I'm excited for it. I know by session, by week three or four in the program, that people are going to, quote, go off track. It's just, it happens all the time, right? Now, mm-hmm. I have that plan, but everyone goes off track for a different reason. So mm-hmm. what I tell my clients is, this is what happens in traditional dieting is you beat yourself up, you deprive yourself for a couple of days, hit the gym twice as hard, right, as punishment. But what I do is I say, that's research. We want to dig into that. What happened there? What were you afraid of feeling? What was your hurdle?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I mean by process versus saying, okay, so on week three, this is what's going to happen, because that's not
right.
real life.
Right. That's really great. Now, what's the biggest myth you'd like to debunk when you think about whether it's the fitness industry, the weight loss industry, whatever. What's the biggest myth that you want to debunk? Because when I say whatever, I don't mean that dismissively, but what I realize is that when we talk about food and we talk about, you know, emotional eating specifically, it's a convergence of so many different spheres, right? It's, you know, food in terms of like the Weight Watchers and the Jenny Craigs and all of that. Then there's the gym, and then there's, you know, all of these alternative ways of eating. So when you think about all of it, and I know that's a really huge question. Sorry about that. What's the biggest myth that you'd like to debunk?
Yeah, I think the biggest one is that healthy living is a drag and that it's expensive, which kind of goes under that drag, right? And I think this is part of the correlation with money. And we tell ourselves things. And, hey, I did it for years, so I'm not judging anyone. I emotionally ate for 18 years. So I say this with the utmost empathy. But the way that we've been conditioned to believe things about healthy living, that it involves sacrifice and it involves going to a sterile gym and doing stuff that only counts if you, you know, if you're only running on a treadmill for 60 minutes, that's really boring, or only if you're eating salad, or only if you're spending $8 on a cleanse, a juice that they sell at the grocery store, even though you could make it for a dollar, right? So I think those are the biggest, I think that's the biggest myth, because what I found, you know, in my own life is like there was nothing more expensive and draining to me than getting my medications refilled, still not feeling better, sitting in the doctor's office. I mean, that's time and money. Right. You know, going to the gym and like dreading that, especially when I was, you know, when you have a couple hours free to yourself every day and then you're going to spend an hour at the gym that you don't like and then a half an hour getting there and back. You know, it's like any normal human being is going to be like, no, thank you. So I actually think that healthy living gives you so much freedom, and I've never experienced more joy in my life, waking up feeling great every day and feeling like I'm finally in control of my body versus just waiting for the next health problem to fall from the sky.
Well, you know, I know that you're not a fitness trainer per se, but what do you suggest, or how do you, you know, counsel people that just do not like to work out? Okay, I have a friend, I have one friend, she just hates it immensely. She's now working with a trainer, but God forbid she do anything that makes her hair sweat. She's like, no. She'll do weights. But she is not doing anything aerobic of nature. So what do you do? And by the way, she looks really good. But what do you do for people who are just like, exercise is just not their thing?
Yeah, no. And I will say, though, just because someone looks good, we have a huge epidemic of very thin people who are very unhealthy. So that's probably another big myth. Because you're thin, you're healthy. You know, I'm glad you brought this up, because this is also kind of a mistake when it comes to people with food. They cling on to like supplements or a superfood, when really the bigger issues that they need to work on, like why do I always come home at night and eat food, you know, or just overeat, is the bigger question. And when it comes to exercise, you know, there's this new mantra going around that sitting is the new smoking. And while it's great to exercise for short bursts, and I do pay attention to that because it affects people's blood sugar, which affects their insulin and affects what kind of foods they need. But really what people need to do is just focus on being more active. I mean, if you're for people who don't like to work out, all right, can you walk to work? Can you get up when you're at the office every hour and walk around? Can you take the stairs? You know, my office is like on the third floor. I've started taking the stairs. It's not that big of a deal, but I go up there a couple of times, you know, every day. And so the bigger issue is being active throughout the day rather than really doing those bursts. So that's probably where I would start with them. And then I would say, you know, we're also conditioned to believe that fitness is in a gym or it's at a boot camp. But there are so many new types of fitnesses that can be really fun. I mean, I really like hip-hop dance, and we have three different places around here that do hip-hop dance, and I just go there. It's, you know, I don't know if I'm in my target heart rate or whatever, but I'm having a great time. So I think finding something that the body does love to move. We do feel so much better. So either moving more throughout the day or finding something that you may not consider it to be exercise, but the fact that you're moving your body is super healthy.
I love that. I love that. I love that a lot. Definitely. And, you know, just to connect with the the title and the purpose in terms of including the issues around money and buying, I think what I'd like to add in terms of the biggest myth that I'd like to debunk is the whole idea that money is just about money, and that if you want to make some changes in your financial life and you just hunker down and focus on the numbers, then you'll get the results that you want. You might get the results that you want, but I don't know. My experience and my work with clients has revealed that that change is not sustainable. So you'll get a burst that will make you feel like, oh yeah, I've had success. But it doesn't last very long because you don't realize that you didn't really address the underlying issues, the underlying patterns, the underlying behaviors that led to whatever was the reason that you came to me in the first place.
Yeah, and we all want something to grab onto, right? It's like if we have a big, long to-do list, what do? We check Facebook or get back to email. Right? It's like, oh, I did something.
Mm-hmm.
Check it off the box. But what you and I are talking about is there's this big process. We're going to help you break it down into those manageable steps, but make sure you're doing the right manageable steps, right, and focusing on that next step versus what feels like the right next step. Because I think, I don't know, I mean, I don't know the exact numbers in terms of financial planning, but and I think people almost get numb to these numbers, but 95% of diets fail. So maybe it's time to start questioning the model instead of people, you know. It's learning to break down. I kind of went off on a tangent, but it's my little.
No, So you know what? I love that, and then I'll move on because I also want to open up the line and see if folks have any questions or comments. There's this show. I don't have cable, but there's this show that comes on regular TV. And it's not the regular Channel 7, but it's like a sister to the Channel 7 here in New York. I live in New York. And I think it's called Living Well Network or something like that. And it is a show that is an offshoot. It's somehow connected to The Biggest Loser. But the show that I saw this weekend, the woman was the first woman to win The Biggest Loser. And she lost like 122 pounds or something like that. In the 4 years since she won, she's gained it back. Not all of it. She gained 50 pounds back. But one of the things that she said was that every single person who's won The Biggest Loser has gained, if not all of their weight, a good percentage of their weight back. And I was just like, that is fascinating. That was just totally fascinating to me. And I wondered why she was the only one who had a show that was kind of highlighting her continued process or struggle. But I just thought that that was so interesting that even with all of the support that she had, she was still not able to keep it off.
Well, right. And I mean, I could go on about how unhealthy The Biggest Loser is. But again, that's drama, right? And now we're connected to her struggle, right? That's the hero's journey that we love. It's the same rags to riches story that we are conditioned to believe in, right?
Right.
You know, it's like you just work hard and hunker down and it's going to happen. And that's, I mean, you have to work hard, but there are some other things that you have to be looking
right. at. But are you working hard on the right thing?
Yes. And with Biggest Loser, I mean, I wrote a post on this. Like, they, again, it's this, things have to be hard. When emotional things come up, they're solved in 2 minutes. I mean, and then people move on. It's like, whoa, that is not real life. And then people start to, I mean, first of all, the weight that they expect people to lose weight at, your metabolism crashes. So you are indefinitely, I mean, it's without a doubt that you're going to gain some of it back. But what I noticed about them, and I've actually referenced that show in Truth to Food, and all my clients resonated with it, is her name was Allie Vincent, and she has that
show. That's the show.
Yep, I remember because I always use this example. In one of the shows, she was walking with someone in the freezer aisle, and she said, and now you can do lunges while you shop. And I sat there and I was like, I never want my clients thinking they have to do lunges in the grocery aisle, nor would they. But the fear that she has around her weight and food has not been dealt with, right? That is the trainer behind her. It's the invisible trainer behind her telling her she should be doing lunges in the freezer aisle
right,
while you're
right,
grocery
right.
shopping.
Right.
So you know, it's one of the biggest, you know, the biggest, I think, challenges with people is, like you said, knowing what to focus on. But actually, what we really need to focus on is quite simple. Simple does not mean easy. But it's not actually all of this drama and all of this weigh-ins and all that stuff. It's day in and day out doing the moderate things that almost, you know, I say moderation is the new radical, right? Rather than working out 4 hours a day, what you really need to do is just be more active. Rather than going on a detox, what you really need to do is try to eat real food. But there's nothing sexy or dramatic about that. So we think it's not working.
Right. It's so funny that you would say that, because I have a coaching client, and I had to tell her not too long ago that she needs to stop chasing the sexy, because she wants to invest in, like, international stocks and, you know, do all of these things. And it's like, that is not what you don't, first of all, you don't know what you're doing. You don't understand it. So you shouldn't do it at all.
Yeah. But, I mean, didn't Warren Buffett, you know, always say invest in what you know, right?
Oh, yeah. We know how successful he's been with that, so we need not really look any further. But one of the things I want to just kind of go back to, and then loop that into my next question to you, and then open the line for a minute, is you mentioned something about a model and a framework, and then you also talked about, you know, how simple is not easy. When it comes to making simple but smart choices when it comes to food, one, what makes a choice smart? And then two, what's the framework that people can, you know, always bounce back to, even if they fall off the proverbial horse, if you will? What's that framework that they can always go back to get them back on track?
Yeah. And this is going to sound completely unsexy, but it's always to eat food from the earth. The closer that you can get to what Mother Nature made, it's amazing the results that people will get. 80% of their fatigue, their cravings, a lot of health problems that you didn't think, you know, that were tied to the food you were eating will clear up. 80% of that will clear up if you get real foods. And by real foods, I mean not fat-free anything. We need fat. Fruits, vegetables.
How many of your peers actually say that we need fat?
I know.
Wow. Okay.
But healthy fats, not, you know,
potato
chips and pizzas, but your avocados and your coconut oil and your olive oils and your ghee. And so I think when I get off track, what I always come back to is the basics. Am I drinking enough water? Am I getting enough sleep? Because all of that influences what you eat, right? Eating is just kind of like the culmination of all of your habits when you go for bad choices. So it's like usually, like, I'm in the middle of launching a product right now. And so I have not had a chance to sleep as much. And wouldn't you know, it's like, okay, I'm craving some sugar now because I'm tired. Now, fortunately, mm-hmm. we've been snowed in, and I only have organic navel oranges, so that has been what I've gone to. But it could have been a lot worse if it wasn't so bad out, you know?
Right, definitely. So before I move on, go ahead.
Oh, well, no, I was just going to say, if that can always help people, you know, return to the true north in a way, is just returning
right.
to the basics.
Right. Back to basics. Love it. So, guys, I want to, and ladies, I want to open the line and see if anybody has any questions or any comments about what we've discussed so far. So if you're on the phone, press *2 to raise your hand. And if you are on the webcast, again, you should have a box on the left-hand side of your screen, and that will let me know that you have a question. And someone wrote amen with a whole bunch of exclamation marks, but I wish I knew what they were saying amen to. So if you wrote amen, what made you say amen? Oh, my goodness.
Maybe they don't want to be doing lunges in the grocery store aisle either.
Exactly. Okay, so far no questions on the phone. Let me just see if there's anybody in the question box. Ah, someone said amen to hating exercise. That's pretty funny. Activity over exercise.
Okay. I do want to challenge people who think they hate exercise, because again, a lot of my clients come to me, you know, first for food, and they're not working out at all. And as they start to feel better, because they're not so tired, because their moods are up, they realize that the exercise actually continues the cycle of feeling good. So I would challenge people. I'm not saying that you have to love exercise, but really consider if it's you don't like the exercise the way you've been told it has to be, or if you really, most people I know, like, love going for a walk, you know, outside on a nice summer day or around, you know, some very nice naturescape. Think about ways that you do feel good when you move, because it is, I think most people actually do like to move. They just don't know that.
Huh, that's a good way to look at it. What makes you feel good to just move, and then just figure out how you can do more of that? Okay. I like that. Okay, so tell us a little bit more about, you know, the folks with whom you work. When they come to you, what are they seeking? What are they telling you that they want? And then here's the thing that I really want to know is, what do you see that they need? Because I find that sometimes when people, when they come to me and they have a particular challenge, I'm seeing something that they are not. And so what I realize that they need is not something that's even on their radar. So, for example, to make it much more concrete, I have one client who is in a great deal of debt. So he came to me because he's like, I got to get out of debt. And while, yes, that is an ultimate end result, but really what he needs is a business plan to figure out how to make his business work so he can generate more revenue. Because if he generates the revenue, that debt can be paid off in no time. So he's so focused on paying off the debt that he's not really focused on how do I shift my business or jigger my business, you know, rejigger my business model so that it's generating for me what I need plus so that I can take care of this debt with ease. So I'm just curious, again, you know, when people come to you, what are they coming to you asking for help on? And then how does that differ, if it does, with what you see that they need? Does that question make sense?
Of course, of course. And I think, I mean, coaching is all about, you know, looking at probably 8 different ways to look at something. So, and that's one thing that I'm really good at. So, a typical person, and I work mainly with women, but, you know, they come to me and they're type A, they're accomplished, they've got a lot going on, but they can't understand how this discipline and drive, why they still have challenges with food, right? If I'm so organized and disciplined and can do all this, why can't I do this with food? But I think that they realize that they can't put this same type of personality to work with food. They suspect that there's something deeper going on, and they're curious about it. So that's the first thing, is that I can give them what they need because they're curious, which I think is important. And, you know, just like you say, money reflects back to you, you know, so mm-hmm. does food. Food reflects back mm-hmm. to you. And so, mm-hmm. You know, we spend and eat every day, mostly automatically. It's and what I think I really give them, first of all, is introducing and creating space for people to explore the relationship with food. So mm-hmm. just creating that space to say with non-judgment, because God knows I have been there, and I really understand what it's about. It has nothing to do with the food, and that's what excites me. But really, I think the first thing that I do is I give them a space to explore, and I give them the right questions. Again, how you frame something is determines everything. And that's what, you know, mm-hmm. Einstein was talking about. You can't solve a problem with the same level of consciousness that was created it. That's how, mm-hmm. why working with someone like you or me, you get this completely different perspective. And what I think that I give them is I give them the tools to create a life that they want to be healthy for. So a lot of my clients come because they want to lose weight, but they know that there's got to be something else. And what happens is a lot of people get into this, when this happens, when I lose this, then X, right? Then I'm going to give myself permission to pursue my dreams, or then I'm going to start dating, or then I'm going to be more confident, right? And what I help them see is that actually creating those things that they're putting off, they have to implement now. Because by creating that life that they want to be healthy for, that gives them momentum and tailwind to keep making the changes that they need to make, and it makes them want to prioritize their health. So I think that's really what I know that they need. Even for people who seem like their life is great on the surface, right? This is everything that they've wanted. There's still always something more that can be fine-tuned.
Fantastic, fantastic. And that, you know, is a great lead into the next question that I have, which is, what's the correlation that you see between food and self-love and self-esteem?
Yeah, there's a big one there. So I think what I'm going to do is give you an example of a client I'm working with right now. She was early 50s, very established in her career. That part of her life was taken care of. And she came to me, she wanted to lose, you know, over 50 pounds. And she had kind of like checked out with her health, right? And she never prioritized herself. Which when you do that, you know, you do start to feel less worthy, and you do start to feel insecure, right? And also, I don't want to, you know, totally go by gender lines, but women are more conditioned to be people pleasers than men are. And so she had very much, you know, made sure that she was pleasing everyone else. And then you start to lose that idea of what actually you want to do. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we started with the food. I always start with the food because that's something to grab onto. And it's also something that I say, when you stop eating prepackaged foods, you stop wanting a prepackaged life. And when people really start to wake up, they start to question a lot of other things. Like, oh, you know, I was told this was the right way. And now the thought process that's going on is saying, oh, well, maybe I should question some other things. And, you know, so this client that I'm using the example of, so she started to feel better about herself because she was losing weight. And her energy was coming back. Her cravings were going down. She was sleeping better. Her joint pain was going down. So then, you know, it was still about, like, when is the scale going to move more? Even though she's lost over 40 pounds, like, in I think it's now 8 months we've been working together, which is a great sustainable rate, and she looks great. But one of the things that, you know, she really was after, she wants to be in a relationship. And so what we started with was not waiting until you're at your goal weight, but how do you start engaging with life more? You know, mm-hmm. how do you start doing that? It doesn't mean you have to go put yourself on online dating right away. Mm-hmm. But she started to open up to the people in her family. She started to ask for what she needs, which is a total counterintuitive new way of being for her. And she started, you know, we just had a session yesterday. She's like, she went away on a trip for 3 weeks and totally opened up with a friend. She's like, I ate chocolate. I had biscuits. She's like, but I lost 3 pounds. And she's like, and I'm like, exactly. And she's like, I'm starting to realize I can get what I need. I'm feeling more safe. I'm feeling more secure. I'm feeling more worthy, not because I've lost the weight, but because I'm just engaging more and I'm putting myself out there. And so I think weight can, you know, food can be the initial carrot, but then once we dive into it, we start to really have to question a lot of what we've told about what really makes us worthy, what really makes us, when are we really ready to love ourselves? And eating healthy is part of that, but our weight and food and how we take care of ourselves is also a reflection of how much we prioritize our health and how much we really think our basic health is worth it. So I think that's an example of, you know, and just to wrap up that client example, I said to her, I said, oh my God, you know, how much weight have you lost now altogether? And she's like, I'm not even concerned about that anymore. And I was like, oh, now I know
you're not worried. Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I said, you know what? Now I know you're going to lose the rest, because as soon as you become unattached to that, you're in it for the quality of life that you're getting.
Right. Wow, what a wonderful success story. That's great.
Oh, my God. And it's all the kudos to her, because she's the one walking through the fear of, can I ask for what I want and get what I need? And can I, you know, she's approaching people at work that she's never approached just to engage. And she's just, it's a beautiful, like, metamorphosis that I've seen. I'm really so happy for her.
That is awesome. Well, I want to open up the line for folks to ask some questions if you have any. So if you're on the phone, press *2 to raise your hand to let me know if you have a question, if you have a comment. I don't know if folks got the reminder email before they hopped on the call, but I also included in that a Google Doc form where if you wanted to, you could have submitted a question. And I'm going to hop over there and see if anything came through while I give you a moment to raise your hand. Star 2 if you have a question, if you have a comment. Let me know if anything that we've discussed so far is resonating. I mean, you're still on the line, so thank you for that. That means it's resonating, but anything in particular causing you to say, yeah, she's talking to me.
We're asking people to talk about some of the two most vulnerable subjects.
I know, which is also why I extended the invitation that people could be anonymous if they wanted to. Because I do realize that that it can be tough. So bear with me, folks. I'm just trying to see if anybody has any questions. And I'm just checking all of the different places where you can let me know. All right, I think we're good. So, Allie, you've got this program called Curb Your Cravings. And I definitely want you to share what it is with our folks. But I have to ask first, what's wrong with satisfying your afternoon cravings? I like to snack. And at least I can say that for the most part, I'm a pretty healthy snacker. So I'll have an apple or I'll have a piece of dark chocolate. I do like crunchy things. So sometimes I'll have those crunchy snap peas. So, I mean, for the most part, I'm pretty healthy, but I like to snack. And I get the sense that you're saying no to snacking. And I want to know why.
Well, actually, I mean, yes, the program is Curb Your Afternoon Cravings. And, you know, snacking isn't bad per se. If you're genuinely hungry and you need food, I don't think it's satisfying. But the program is mainly targeted to people who don't want to be snacking in the afternoon. I will say that by sticking with three meals, you do give your body a break digestively. So there is that benefit. But if you're not struggling with your weight and you're hungry in the afternoon, there's nothing wrong with that. Hunger is a very healthy thing. I know people's metabolisms are coming back when they're getting hungry. We've been taught we don't want to be hungry, but it's a good thing to have an appetite. Where I think it becomes a problem when we're snacking is that a lot of people, 3 o'clock hits, and they're ready to slump over in their desk, they're exhausted, or they're bored, or they're anxious. And what afternoon cravings, it's a barometer of whether or not, if you genuinely have cravings, not that you're just, you know, well, I guess some people could be eating out of boredom, but you want to turn to food, it usually means that you haven't eaten the right lunch for yourself. So, and it means that your blood sugar needs to be balanced. And we have an epidemic of type 2 diabetes in our culture, and a lot of people are pre-diabetic. Unfortunately, doctors don't usually tell you until you're diabetic, right? That doesn't happen overnight. A lot of people have high blood sugar levels where they're pre-diabetic. So when people are having afternoon cravings, it says to me that their blood sugar isn't balanced. And not only is that challenging from an appetite standpoint, but from an energy and a mood standpoint, your blood sugar really affects how calm you feel and influences how much energy you feel you have. And so if you don't eat the right lunch, your blood sugar is set, how you eat at one meal sets you up for the next 3 to 4 hours. So that tells me someone's lunch isn't working. And then also it sets up this dynamic where a lot of people then turn to food for boredom or, for stress. And what happens is that it may not be a problem once in a while, but if then you start to set up that dynamic over and over again, then that becomes your coping mechanism rather than dealing with
whatever issue it is. And many times people don't even know what it is. I know I didn't know what it was when I was in the corporate world. But at 3 o'clock, it was like whatever pastries were left over from the morning, you know, whatever someone had a meeting and there were leftover brownies. And then I would say, oh, the day's ruined. I'm not going to work out. And it would send me in this like spiral and I'd go home and overeat. So that's when it can become a problem. But if you're, you know, relatively healthy and you want to munch on something every once in a while, by all means, and it's a healthy snack, I think food should be joyful. I want people to get to the place where food isn't such a barometer of their self-worth or how good they are or how bad they are or whatever. I want people to enjoy it. So if you're genuinely enjoying it, I don't think there's a problem with that afternoon craving. But if it's something that's getting in your way of your health goals and your frustration with yourself, then it's time to address it.
I mean, the parallel that I draw, well, first, thank you for that. I was like, oh, no. But the parallel that I draw in my world is specifically for people that fall into one of two categories. They either have a great deal of debt or they actually have no debt at all. They earn, you know, a very, very nice level of income, but they just have no clue about how much they're spending. And for each of them, what I tell the folks that are, you know, deeply in debt and who feel like they can't spend money on anything and nor can they save, my counsel to them is always, you've got to save a little bit because it's just energetically draining to only see all of your money going toward paying off your debt and you don't see anything happening on the other side of your balance sheet where you have something growing. So there's that for folks that are in debt. It's like, make sure you're setting aside, even if it's, I always use this example, even if it's just $2.74 a day, make sure you're putting something aside because a little adds up to a lot. And also treat yourself to, like not big indulgences, but, you know, small indulgences. And then for the people for whom debt is not an issue, you know, survival is not an issue. Like I'm thinking of one particular client who, you know, six-figure salary, no debt at all, you know, no quote-unquote financial stress in the ways that most people equate stress in terms of money. But at the same time, they really don't have a clue around where their money is going. So one of the things that we came up with for them is, given the fact that you don't like to necessarily pay attention to the minor details, if you will, the big picture for you is to make sure that no matter what, you're saving 15%. So if you're saving 15%, you can spend what you want and you don't have to worry about the details of how much you're spending and where you're spending, and you can do that with ease because you know that you've got your savings target and you've got your different buckets. And to me, what you've just described is the similar spirit in which you're talking about with regards to craving. If you have it and you are eating healthy things to satisfy that craving, and that craving is not a way of avoiding something, whether it's boredom or stress, then by all means do it. And I think we get so caught up in extremes, number one, and then number two, this whole thing of constriction, I think, that it's just really nice to hear someone say no, but be mindful of why you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly. I find that the biggest challenge for me is that people don't know how badly they feel. And I was in this boat. I thought I was just going to have to live with asthma and my allergies and my IBS. Right? And I was like, oh, but I don't have cancer. You know, that's okay. I was like expecting this least common denominator of health. And when you bring more awareness to whatever process, you know, you're eating or your money, you always will gain something that you didn't see before. And that opening can provide, you know, exponential change or more peace of mind, or any, it will shift your perspective. And mm-hmm. So yes, I mean, kind of going off on a tangent, but yes, it's not about always trying to figure out if you're right or wrong or do this or do not, but in the spirit of being curious and figuring out, could I feel better? Is it possible? Do I really need this? It's super helpful because once you start questioning, you know, it starts to peel back like the layer of an onion and other stuff comes up. So yeah, and I think it's so important around food and money because there is so much judgment around it.
Yeah.
Most people are, you know, do this, don't do that. And I feel like health has become this status symbol now that everyone can buy knockoffs, you know, Poach bags and Vera Wang's producing for Kohl's. And, you know, I'm not a big shopper, so I don't even know, what, you know, every high-end designer now has something at, like, Target or whatever. I feel like health has become this new status symbol because you need to have the education to know what's healthy. You have to live in a place that actually you can have access to food. You know, I live in Philadelphia. We have these food deserts here where even if you could afford healthy food, not that it's super expensive, but, you know, organic is more expensive than non-organic or packaged food actually tends to be very expensive. But if you're in a food desert, you know, or, and then you need time to exercise. And so it's added this whole other level of pressure beyond just what we've been told about, what we've been told is going to happen at a certain weight. So bringing a spirit of curiosity can really do wonders and make you more successful.
Fascinating. Well, I want to be mindful of the fact that we did call this the Financial Intimacy Hour, and we're bumping up at 8:56. So before we wrap up, and I want to open the line one more time for people to ask questions, but while people are getting their questions together if they have them, my question to you is, what do people need to get right when it comes to food?
When it comes right to food.
Mm-hmm.
So much. No. One of the things that I think is really important, especially in the context of this call with food, with money, money and our relationship with it, that money at its most primal root is about security. And so is food. Food at its central focus, you know, during the attachment period that we have as children with our parents, that bonding is largely done over food. And so both of those bring a sense of security. Money is also about freedom, right? How much freedom you can have. It provides not only spending purchases, but you can have different choices of where you want to live, you know, different types of education. And food is also, in a sense, people don't want to have restrictive rules. They want to be able to eat intuitively and go with the flow and eat out with their families. I mean, we have, I want to back up for a second. Food is seen also at a security level in terms of not only during the attachment period when we're children at a very small age, but it's also ingrained in our family traditions, which is we largely tie to security. And then money is also about, like I said, freedom and rewards. And food is seen as rewards as well. And so anytime we're feeling any kind of fear or anytime we feel like life is kind of a grind and we need something temporary soothing, that tends to be when we go for food. And so,
or when we spend money.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes,
I was hoping you would finish that.
That's so true.
That's when you're like, wow, that really nice shirt could make me feel better because
it's
got to be, all this work has to be worth for something. So these are primal needs. And so if you start to get right what food is symbolizing in your life, then you can create the appropriate substitute. Because if you really want a feeling of safety, diving into ice cream is not, it's going to give that to you for like for 5 minutes, but then you're going to beat yourself up and then you're going to have less certainty about your own willpower and that spiral that we talked about in the beginning. So what you need to really realize is, how do I feel more safe and secure in my life? It doesn't mean that you can't use the ice cream as a temporary bridge, but the more that you, you know, integrate safety or different types of non-food related pleasures into your life, the less food has its pull on you. And so I really want people to get that, yes, you have to pay attention to what you eat, but you also have to pay attention to what you're symbolically reaching food for and your spending purchases.
Oh, my God. So I am over here just with the biggest smile on my face because, you know, one of the things when people ask me, well, what do? You know, I say that I help people understand what
they do with their money and why. Because if they have that sense of awareness, they can make better choices. And basically, you've said the same thing as it pertains to food. If you understand, okay, indulge yourself, but understand why you are doing that so that you have a better framework from which to operate to make a different choice if you choose next time around, you'll be that much better off.
Yes, exactly. And no one's talking about this, right? They're saying, no, just try a new diet or budget more. And that's I'm going to quote Einstein again, but he said, you know, if I had an hour to save the world, I'd spend 59 minutes defining the problem accurately and 1 minute solving it. There's different quotes of how many minutes he actually referenced to solve it.
Right.
The point saying is, if you can define what's actually going on accurately, then the solution flows. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but you're going to get somewhere.
Right. Well, this has just been awesome, and you know, I could just have this conversation for a much longer period of time, but I do want to be mindful of people's time and the fact that we did say an hour. So, Allie, I just want to thank you so very much for coming on today and being my guest for tonight and really, you know, just giving me an opportunity to geek out and at the same time sharing some pearls of wisdom, which were a ton, with our guests this evening. So, folks, I know it's 9:01, but I do want to give you an opportunity. If you have a question, raise your hand and we'll get to your question. So 1, 2, 3, *2 on your phone. If you have a question, I'll hop on over to you and make you live. I'll check the Q&A box to see if anything's come in over there. And I think we just have a silent bunch, Allie, because we've just given folks a lot of stuff to think about, as you said, on two topics that are pretty heavy.
Yeah. But we want to make light.
We want to make lighter. We got to deal with the seriousness, but we can definitely do it in the spirit of lightness, because you have more fun that way, right? But again, thank you, Allie. Again, all of you that are listening to this live, and anybody that ends up listening to the recording, thank you so much for tuning in. The next Financial Intimacy Hour will be on Wednesday, February 26th. So stay tuned for those details. Everybody, stay warm as you possibly can. Stay safe, especially if you are traveling. And until next time, have a wonderful rest of the evening, folks. Take care.
Thank you, Jacquette.
You're welcome, Allie. Thank you. This is awesome.